Not to guide this interview, but you know, it's like I kind of want to make it fun, you know, because the movie is so dark in itself.
Yeah.
Just kind of want to talk about what it's like working with Paul Bettany and,
we'll do some of that.
You know, Scott Stewart, and what do you think about him as a first-time director, and you know that type of stuff. You know, the fact that he owns a special effects company and
owns Orphanage.
Absolutely. You know, and that type of stuff. And that way it's, we're gonna cover the movie, but you know, I kinda wanna talk about how much fun I had.
We'll talk about that. The reason I got so many story questions in here is a lot of other people. Let's start out with you IDing to camera, please, for those people who are not me who have to cut this. So if you can give me your name and what part you play.
My name is Tyrese Gibson. In Legion, I play the character of Kyle Williams.
Okay, we're going to start with this very simple basic, and that is, what is this movie about?
I have no idea.
Okay.
No. This movie, I don't know, man, it's so much. This movie is about Paul Bettany's character, Michael, being sent to our Earth to prevent these angels, who we normally look at as great and good. In this film, the angels are actually bad, and they're on a mission to get this woman who is pregnant with the future of mankind and all humanity. And so he was one of the angels that was sent, and he decided to protect us instead of kill us. Protect us from all of these other angels that are trying to take us all out. And, you know, we all somehow ended up at Paradise Falls, this diner, and we all kind of met there for our own reasons, and that's where all hell breaks loose.
So angels are kind of like God's army in this case. They're the enforcers.
The angels are kind of like God's angels. Sorry, the army. God's angel. What did you just say?
Angels are like God's army.
Angels are like God's armies. And you said something else.
And they're the enforcers. They're who God sends when he's mad.
Right. Well, in this film, the angels are like God's armies. You know, they're who God sends. They're who God. That's not good.
That's okay.
That's called chicken noodle soup on the throat. Chicken noodle soup is great in life sometimes.
But not in an interview.
but not an interview. All right. So say that again.
Okay. So the angels are God's army. They're his enforcers, and they're what he sends when he's unhappy.
The angels in this film are like a part of God's army. You know, he sends them in to reinforce the things that he needs done in this film. And, you know, the journey begins.
What do the angels look like? They don't look like we think of them as angels.
The images of angels in this film are definitely going to shake some people up, because they're much different than the angels that we always see. You know, the angels are normally such, you know, peaceful, pleasant. They're contributing to your life. You know, whenever someone passes on, they always make reference to, no worries, they're in the heavens with the angels. But the images of these angels are jaw-dropping, arm stretching, coming at you, crawling, demonic looking figures that will scare any child that's under 13.
Good. These angels are really, you don't actually see the angels. They take over other people, right? They do the, did you, I don't know if you were there, the special effects, they have this little like head shake thing they do.
Yeah, when they're driving.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, it's spooky stuff. Yeah, it's going to give a lot of people nightmares. Legion is giving people permission to have nightmares.
Good one. All right. So, your character, you said everybody comes to this diner for various reasons. Why is your character there?
Kyle Williams, my character, is actually on his way to court. He doesn't have a navigational system in his car. He's relying on this map. And the map is definitely, the map works, but me reading the map just doesn't quite work. So I end up pulling over to this diner to get directions. And that's where all hell breaks loose.
So once bad things start happening at the diner, why doesn't anybody leave?
Well, you kind of get this feeling while you're stuck there that it's safer to stay here than to try and leave. Because we all kind of individually came to this diner. And so for me, I'm by myself. My mission is to get back to my family. You know, I'm in the middle of a divorce where my wife is trying to take my son. And, you know, I'm figuring with all of these guns and ammunition and this man named Michael, who seems to know what he's talking about. You know, he's there to protect us, so why would I leave my protection? Like, I'm from the streets, and so it's kind of common sense. Me leaving here with this one gun versus all of these automatic weapons and grenades and all of this, artillery. Common sense is telling me that I should probably stay here and see how this whole thing pans out. But I'm a little uncomfortable with the old lady being here. So let's get rid of her and try our best to enjoy our stay at Paradise Falls Hotel.
You got a nice weapon that you carry yourself. Is that a Desert Eagle that you carry? I couldn't say.
No, it wasn't a Desert Eagle. It was it's like a 9 chrome 9mm, if I can remember correctly. Or is it a Desert Eagle?
I don't know. It's big.
No, it's not a Desert Eagle. No.
It's still impressive.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. And then you get in a big firefight. All these people show up and...
Yeah. Yeah, it gets aggressive. It gets very aggressive. Like I said, you know, I was just an innocent guy on his way to court to try and fight for custody of my son, and I end up having to go to war with a bunch of things that I don't understand. But it just felt good to be able to shoot at these things and demand my respect and try and create some type of fear in them to stop them from getting closer. So, all hell breaks loose.
So you, did you have to do firearm or stunt training from the U.S.?
No. I had my training.
You already knew that, so I kind of thought...
Very capable.
From your past films, at least you know how all this stuff works.
Yeah. All you gotta do is just put a gun in my hand and put me in some clothes and I'm ready to go, man. Quick and easy.
I'm gonna hit you with one of the heavy ones because I think you probably have a good answer. Everybody in the diner is from a broken family. Every single one of them has some story like yours. Mm-hmm. You're going through divorce, but it's a broken family. Is that part of the story? Is there something there, some reason why everybody is broken, you know, or their family is broken, it was part of the story?
You know what, I never even put two and two together, but I think it plays a small part in how we all, in a real subliminal way, it kind of all made sense as to why we ended up in this diner. You know, they got a saying that misery loves company. And so I never forget one time somebody told me that I'm attracted to dysfunctional people. And they said that if I go to a club and there's 4,000 women in there, I'm probably gonna pick the most dysfunctional woman in the club. And so now that I'm putting two and two together, all of us having a broken home and ended up in this diner, it kind of all makes sense now. Well, I've turned that around since then.
Okay, all right. I was going to say, that just sounds like a woman would say.
Yeah, I'm attracted to peaceful people now.
Okay.
I had to switch the characteristics up in the things I'm attracted to.
All right.
Yeah, there's a certain voice octave that I'm attracted to at this point. You know, they don't get too high. Keep it candles, gardenia type of environment.
All right. Your character comes across as a character that other characters in the diner are suspicious of.
Mm-hmm.
But are you a good guy? Are you a bad guy?
I'm a good guy with the intentions, with the great intentions of being a bad guy. Yeah. So, I just don't take no shit. And I don't trust anybody.
Thanks, Rich.
Yeah, well, just wait.
Call it out when it's good.
That whole sound bite.
All right, we'll come back to that. We'll ask that question again.
We're clear now, though. Thank you.
Okay. Can we ask that question again?
Absolutely, sir.
So, do you see your character as a good guy? I liked your previous answer, by the way, but being a good guy with intentions of being bad, but when you pull into that diner, you're a good guy, and you stay a good guy.
Yeah, and you know, I'm a good guy with great intentions to be bad if necessary. Yeah. When I get there, I'm just on one mission to get to court, and anything that stands in my path will bring out another side of me. And that's kind of it. That's my story.
There's a scene where Gladys comes in, a little lady. She climbs up on the ceiling and she knocks the place around, and Jeep ends up with her gun and he can't pull the trigger. And you do. Did you ever figure out the backstory of why you were willing? So you have a conversation later that you never actually fired that gun at a person.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, you didn't seem to hesitate. You just...
Well, you know, when Gladys comes into the restaurant, as soon as she says, "Your fucking baby's gonna burn," and then she's got all these flies flying around her, you know, it's a no-brainer that this woman is not of this earth. And that she's some type of satanic something. And rather she's old or not, you know, the respect for old people goes out of the window when you're jumping up, biting people on the neck and saying that your baby is gonna burn and you're crawling up on the ceiling with these superpowers. I mean, I think the biggest motivation was the fact that she showed us her draws, man. I mean, that really pissed me off. I didn't really want to see any grandma panties while I was eating my pancakes.
Fair enough. I was like, where are you
Yeah.
I like that one.
Yeah, I wanted to keep a straight face on that shit.
You did.
They should keep that in this shit, man. Please keep it in there because it's such dry fucking humor, man. Yeah. That shit was funny, man.
I liked it.
I killed the old lady because she showed her panties.
That's disgusting.
It is disgusting, but it's funny as a motherfucker. Come on, Nicole.
Ugh.
Be a good sport.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm ready, guys. Thank you.
You're right on the edge of frame.
Yeah, you gotta watch your left hand there.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go.
And let's be.
Okay. Well, we talked about your character. He's a good guy. Tell me about Michael. Michael's a general in God's army. Is he a good guy? What is he now? He's a traitor. God, so is he a good guy or is he a bad guy?
I actually don't know. Honestly, he came, with God's purpose in mind, to protect her from these evil forces that are trying to stop her from giving birth to this child. But the way he's going about it is very, very aggressive with all the guns and his no-nonsense his no-nonsense approach to what he's doing. I need 1 second.
Sure.
I don't see it.
Okay. Okay, let's get to the little bit easier stuff here. Paul Bettany, Shakespeare-trained actor, classical actor. What's he like on set?
Paul Bettany on set, before the camera started rolling, is literally another person. Like, very intimidating actor he is. I had a lot of fun. I threw my share of parties. He was at every one of them. And him and his wife, Jennifer Connelly, his kids. He's a good guy, good man. We have great chemistry. We bonded really well on this film. And it was always, it was always a respect thing, you know, where it's like, we're hanging out, woohoo, all of the fun. And as soon as it's time to roll, he just becomes a completely different person. So this has never happened to me, and this is my first time ever speaking on this. There was a bunch of moments on this set when I was doing scenes with Paul where we had to look each other in the eyes and communicate and talk, and I went from focusing on doing my scene to enjoying his performance. You're not supposed to enjoy someone's performance while you're performing with them. And it happened. Because he's that good. Really, really good. And so I don't know the whole history in Shakespeare. I know of it. I don't know what it is to be a classically trained actor, but whatever that is, it's definitely great. I'm Paul's biggest fan.
Good answer. Very nice. He's got a bunch of tattoos that they put on him. Apparently every day they had to sort of reapply all these tattoos and whatnot. What is all that? Did they ever tell you what that was?
I would just say it looks like a road map. At times I would look at his tattoos trying to figure out maybe that's the way I should get home. Because my map just kind of wasn't working, man. I, I don't know.
Charles Dutton. You spent a little time with Charles Dutton too. Well, there's another guy that's got some acting chops.
Oh yeah.
So I get the feeling that he's a lot of fun when the cameras aren't rolling. Am I right about that?
He is fun, but he's still very serious even when the cameras are not rolling. So it's not a real stretch compared to Paul. But he is serious. And so on the set, time to roll, he's in it. As soon as the cameras is off, he's pretty serious. But he's fun at the same time. He also didn't miss any of my parties. And he loves sushi, rock shrimp, and lobster rolls. Yeah.
Does his character, this Percy character, does that character strike you as a real person? That seem like somebody you might know or
You know, there's always this thing where, especially with African Americans in this country, where I've learned to pay attention to smiles. There's a lot of pain in people's smiles. And we smile to put up this shield as a way to forget about things in the past. You know, that's the reason why eyes were put on the front of your head so you can just keep looking forward. And Charles reminded me a lot of that, you know, where you just know that if you sat down with him, he's very well versed on his history, African American history in particular. He's well versed about the who's who and the politics and, you know, and so you could find yourself being entertained and yet not entertained for a few hours at a time, because he just can go on and on talking about history. And when I say not entertained, it's only because it's so much information, it's really hard for you to keep up. And so you just kind of like, you know, but it's like, he's very serious, you know. It's a man that spent time in prison, you know. Since he did some hard time in jail. And so, you know, he carries that on his personality. This hard father, you know, this I wish a motherfucker would, that's what I call it, type of energy, you know what I'm saying? And it's intense, you know. You gotta walk away from him sometime and go, shake it off a little bit. All right. It's very intense. And that's what he brings to his characters, you know. We had a scene on the roof in this film, and you know, it was one of them days where you're like, okay, that's all you can say, like, okay, yeah, this is dead serious, you know. I'm sitting here, and he's so involved in what he's doing, he surrendered to that scene, you know. He really owned the words. He became Percy with this backstory. And I don't know exactly what he drew from, but he drew from something that made what he was talking about come from a real place. And those tears just start flowing. You know, there's an industry secret that we have on movie sets. They got this stuff called menthol, where if you have to cry in the movie, you know, the makeup folks come in and it's like this mint, strong menthol. It's like the same stuff you put in your nose when you're trying to clear the little Vicks Hazel thing. It just clears you up. And so they blow that into your eyes if you need a little tear assistance. And he never used it. And, you know, I was in school, man, once again.
So how do you play opposite that? And you got to somehow pull down the other end of the conversation.
Yeah, well, you know, I just didn't think that that scene welcomed me to go there emotionally. It was all about him, you know, and, you know, I'm a student. And I think the one thing that people are gonna be able to say about me, Tyrese Gibson, as an actor, is that I never purposely tried to upstage anybody or outdo anybody. And when it was time for you to have your moment, you know, I let you have it. I never tried to jump in during your moment. And even though it was both of us on the roof, it was his moment. And I think if anybody walk away from this film, of all of the scenes that Charles Dutton did, I think that's gonna be one of those moments that people talk about. And I was happy to be a part of it. And I was happy to not stand in the way of him having his moment.
Well, let's skip on to the, let's see. Well, tell me, let's go to the part that a lot of people are going to be watching this movie for, which is the stunts and the monsters and that sort of thing. Were you part of any of the stunts? Did you do any stunt work on this?
Yeah, I did some stunts, man. I'm a stunt guy.
Okay, so what'd you do? Tell me about it.
One of the scenes I was really excited about, they tried to use a stunt double for it, and I told him, hell no. Because I actually slid off the roof. I slid off the roof shooting. Like literally sliding off of a roof. Da 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 da. You know, shooting. And I had both guns in my hand. And, you know, that was my moment.
Was it fun?
Oh, absolutely.
Crash pad down below, I hope.
I don't know.
You slid off the roof. What'd you land on?
I won't confess to any of that.
Okay,
you know what I'm saying? I don't want to downplay
sharp rocks.
Yeah, I don't want to downplay my rock star moment. You know, yeah. As a matter of fact, you're asking me way too many questions.
Understood. Not a problem. is that the biggest moment for you?
No, that and you know, I had this one scene where, you know, I had to fight about three or four of these angels that tried to attack me. And it was all in the, you know, trying to protect this little boy, this little kid. And, you know, that's all I'm willing to talk about from there.
Pyrotechnics, big explosions, and lots of gunfire.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, some of my most exciting movies is when you're in your trailer and you're not able to rest because there's so many things exploding and so much gunfire. You just wonder, what's the point in you telling me to go to my trailer and rest for a few hours when it feels like it's Iraq right outside of my door? So, to hell with that conference call.
How many rounds, just out of curiosity, if you had to guess, how many rounds did you fire off blanks or whatever?
Probably 4,000. At least that.
Yeah. You tired of it after a while?
No.
Still fun?
No, yeah, it's always fun. Sometimes I take my earpieces out because I just want to hear it. It gets a rush. Nicole, you're extremely quiet in there.
What are you guys even talking about?
I think she passed out.
Oh, I'm totally done.
I think you guys are like, I think at this point I'm thinking that you're really a part of the bathroom.
Well, I'm so a bathroom attendant, it's my new job.
So I have one more question for you. It's actually just something I'd like you to do. I've never seen the movie before. I want you to tell me why I should go see it.
I think you should go and see this movie because it's a story that's easy to follow. It exposes you to a different dimension of faith and a different, you know, dimension of images of certain religious beliefs and different interpretations of what you may have read from the Bible. You know, the beautiful thing about life is when you pick up a book, no two experience is going to be the same. No two interpretation of that same book is going to be the same, nor is the book going to impact people's lives the same. And so this film, to sum it all up to me, is an interpretation of different spirituality and faith and religious interpretations. And a lot of action. Some really good looking people. And I think Scott Stewart, the director, is definitely a force to be reckoned with.
Let's talk about Scott a little bit. I totally let that go. Let's talk about Scott a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a first-time director. Always makes me nervous. Because, you know, my experience has been people winging it and not really having their stuff together. Not really knowing what the outcome of the scene is. And also being caught up in visuals over being caught up in making sure that the actors understand what mind state to be in, exactly what's going on, giving us the genuine heads up about what's about to happen beyond this particular scene, you know, and being so well versed about their script and what's going on and whatever this world is, to where at no point you're able to say, I have no idea what's going on right now. And that's expected of a first-time director. And, you know, fortunately, I didn't experience that on this set. And it says a lot about Mr. Scott Stewart. And the other side of it is, not only are you dealing with some pretty heavyweight actors who all need their share of attention to feel important, you're also dealing with, you know, a nice size budget, some studio heads that's on top of your head to make sure that you're not going over budget. And more than anything, you're dealing with a huge dimension with a first-time director that ties into special effects. And, you know, the special effects setup in itself is just a mind, you know, to screw your mind up in itself. And, you know, with all of that stuff going on and all of these dimensions and layers and seeing the unseen, because it's all going to be done in post-production, is a lot for a first-time director to take on, and I think Scott did a great job.
Tell me, you mentioned there were a lot of special effects rigs or something. Did I misunderstand you? What kind of rigs did they have? For, you know, I noticed there were some cars blowing up and, you know, trucks sliding around and people flying, and the, you know, some of that was done as a digital effect, but some of it was done practically. What was this diner like in terms of rigs?
Well, you know, the beautiful thing about directors who have visions, you know, one of my favorite quotes is, only those that can see the invisible can do the impossible. And so when you're on the set with Scott, being is that he owned a special effects company, you know, called Orphanage, he's describing all of this stuff. And there's only so much of this stuff that you can see physically on the set with your own eyes. And then you just kind of say, all right, just tell me where I'm supposed to be, what I'm supposed to be saying, and, you know, when I'm supposed to shoot this old lady for showing us her underclothes, and, you know, let's just get this thing done, you know, and that's it. So, you know, you just kind of got to trust. You got to gain a certain amount of trust for the people that you're working with. And the beautiful thing is while we were filming, you know, he had a bunch of post-production stuff going on already with the effects, so he was able to show us some stuff, and that kept us all motivated, you know, so.
Okay, so you gave me the, Shakespearean answer to why I should go see this movie. Now, if I'm 15 years old, why should I go see this movie?
I think people should go and see this film because this is the film to start your year off with. This is not one of them films that you want your friends to go and see and then you're stuck at school stupid like, man, I should have seen it. You want to be the first to see it. This is one of them films that's gonna, it's gonna scare you at times. It's gonna make you nervous at times. It's very unpredictable. It's gonna make you laugh. It may even make you cry. And at the same time, in your own little sick way, it's gonna be very educational because it's always the thought, like, there is a possibility that this could happen. That's my answer.
That's a good answer. I'll take that one.
My man.
You have been very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Tyrese.
Appreciate you playing along and letting me feed you stuff.
Nice job.
Hey, would you guys want, I don't know if you want it or not, but maybe we can get some room tone?
Yeah. Wait for Tyrese.
Yeah. 30 seconds of room tone.
30 seconds room tone.
Cutting room tone.